Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Spotlight Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Go to the website, totaltutor.net, to find out more information on the Total Education Network, now syndicated to 90-plus stations. Go to the website, check it out. Also, the Breakthrough College Tutoring and Consulting Company. You can call me at 412-523-0289. Well, this week capped off some unbelievable interviews, but this weekend, Miami Book Fair International live for 2 days, interviewing over 34 authors. So I better get some sleep after tonight's recording, because this weekend is going to be a busy, busy weekend with interesting authors. But love to cap off the Spotlight Show to start out with Jarrett. Jarrett, how are you?
I'm very good, Neil. Looking forward to our conversation for tonight.
Exactly. And tomorrow I'm going to be writing the book, finishing up the finishing touches on the hopefully rough draft. If no one interrupts me, I'm going to kind of turn everything off in the office and just go hammer it out. So we're looking forward to that. But you had a really nice break, but a very special break. Tell us about your little special break last week.
Oh, I certainly will. Our listening audience is familiar with the situation with our son and our adopted son and his disorder. We've talked about numerous times on our show. And this past September, my son had a surgical procedure to operate on a tumor in his brain, right on the auditory nerve. Initially, the surgery was going to really be quite complicated. Recuperating time looked like it could be pretty extensive. And at that point, I had contacted the Make-A-Wish Foundation right here in Pittsburgh. I did that through their website. So anyone who has an interest in that knows someone. And anybody can make a referral, as long as they're a family member, family friend, to at least get moving on something that might be able to benefit the child involved. So that's what I did. I'm his dad, and I got the ball rolling, as people like to say, by making that initial referral. Within 24 hours, I was contacted by a representative of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and they provided me with the next step, which is a HIPAA release so that the Make-A-Wish Foundation can actually communicate directly with the child's surgeon, physician, whoever ultimately is making the big decision. And that was where we went. They contacted the surgeon. Ultimately, it comes down to the medical professionals saying whether the child should be considered for a wish or not.
Oh,
and in our case, the surgeon felt that he was a wonderful candidate for that. That process took about a week before we knew, and we got the call from a local volunteer who was representative with Make-A-Wish to present us with the good news that our son would be granted a wish.
Quite interesting, I think, Jarrett, because of the situation that, you know, you go through these hard times, but being able to get that Make-A-Wish, why did your son want the wish that he ended up getting? You could tell us the wish. What was his desire reason?
Well, his wish was to go to Disney World. He has a cousin who goes to Disney World pretty frequently. His my brother has a vacation home down in that area, so they frequently go to Disney. He's heard his 9-year-old cousin talk about Disney quite a bit. So my son really wanted to go there. It also happens to be the wish that is most granted with the National Make-A-Wish Foundation. Here's something I actually found incredibly interesting, Neil. I'm hoping our listeners will too. Pittsburgh is the more Make-A-Wish wishes are granted in the Pittsburgh chapter than any other chapter within the United States. I was stunned by that. You know, we're a big city, but not the biggest in the United States. I'd say we're kind of a bordering on major, but maybe right in the middle. But I was really amazed that Pittsburgh led the way in granting wishes. From there, it was just one incredible event, story after another. The Make-A-Wish representatives came to our home, presented my son with his own little dossier of his wish. It was really just amazing. They came to our home that night, 6:30 in the evening, bearing gifts for my son, teddy bear, a baseball cap, you know, small things, but significant. You know, people have asked me since we've returned, families have asked me, so many people, my wife is on Facebook, so many people have asked us, you know, how would you describe it? And I typically say words such as amazing, incredible, awesome. They don't even come close to detailing, highlighting what the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And then another foundation was involved called Give Kids the World. What they provided for my son, our family, the experience. Here's what I typically say. We were presented with a survey on our last night to rate our experience. And the survey started at 0 for the least satisfying, all the way to 4 for the most satisfying. And my response simply was, words not even close to enough to describe what Make-A-Wish did for our family. You know, I said, you need a 20. You need 100. And it was that remarkable. So from there, they asked us what dates work for us best. They did their best to work within those dates, and totally accommodating. We asked for the 4th through the 10th. We were given the 4th through the 10th. But, Neil, we had no idea what to expect when we got down there. I mean, we knew it would be good, but we could not expect what was provided for us. His wish was Disney World. His wish was so much more than that. Make-A-Wish and Give Kids the World provided us with a wonderful place to stay. We were right across the street from just an unbelievable playground in the Give Kids the World village. Our listeners can actually do a Google search of Give Kids the World, and they can take a YouTube tour of what this village provides for Make-A-Wish families. It provides them with their own little town of beautiful homes. That was the start. We got there on a Sunday. We also flew first class on the way down, which was just a great experience for my son. Wasn't bad for us either. And you know, one show would not be enough to really.
No, not at all. No, we could definitely talk about it. We could talk about this and have part two on this. I know we didn't run out of time yet, but I have a lot of questions, I guess. And I think that we definitely need to reach out to Make-A-Wish some more. Remember, we had Bob Goen on from Entertainment Tonight, former Entertainment Tonight host, on the Double Toll Education Hour talking about Make-A-Wish. But we need to reach out to some of the celebrities that are involved in Make-A-Wish now by saying how pleased you are with what they were able to do. So basically, the red carpet was definitely rolled out for you guys, and you really had a great time. And they have to understand, I guess, again, Davey, again, we keep praying that he will have a long life, but again, to provide something for him when he has gone through such hard times in his life so far is just fantastic, and our prayers will absolutely be with him in many ways. But I think a lot of people out there, if they didn't listen to the radio show, would not know what you've been going through, you and Michelle. So, you know.
And it has been just a fantastic journey. So many people that have, I'll use the word, everyone who has come in contact with my son, has deeply fallen in love with him. As the Make-A-Wish volunteers, the representatives came out to visit him, were just thrilled with his exuberance, his just his happiness, his desire to live life to its fullest. And Neil, and when we go on to talk even more about this, I can simply tell our listeners that Disney World was the Magic Kingdom, Disney World, all of the places that were provided for us were only part of the highlights. We'll leave it with a little bit of a teaser. We did things together as a family that Disney World was only part of it, the experience of it. One of the other ways that I explained this, and I think everyone can hear just my joy, even in my voice, discussing this now, but one of the other things that were so important components of this is in the survey they ask you, what was most meaningful? And, you know, and I really thought about that question and how to answer it, and you know, the response that I came up with was almost immediate, but yet still took time to think about it. And that was, what was most meaningful was we're together as a family for 6 days. We never left one another. And, you know, we all have busy lives. He goes to first grade. I work. My wife works. We have responsibilities, but for 6 days, everything that we experienced was the three of us.
Wow.
And that is priceless. It was, as the commercial says, that was priceless, but that was only one of the priceless moments that we experienced during this absolutely amazing journey.
Well, we'll have to talk more about it. Our part two of this and the Make-A-Wish Foundation and Jarrett, what you've been going through. So you'll be back on the Spotlight Show very, very soon, right after Thanksgiving. So take care, Jarrett, and we'll talk soon. Okay, man?
Perfect. Thank you, Neil.
All right, take care, Jarrett. Okay, bye-bye. All right, you'll listen to the Total Education Spotlight Show and the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Wow, always enjoy interviewing very interesting people that have had their brush with greatness in their careers and have met some really, really interesting people that you say that not a lot of people can say they've met. I can say some of the people I've interviewed lately have been unbelievable superstars, so that's, I guess, my brush with greatness. But I'm welcome to the program, Donna Thompson. Donna, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I guess you're a singer, so tell us a bit about your career, but I would say the major, and then those major accomplishments where you kind of ran into some really great people.
Right. Well, I was a background singer back in the 80s. I sung with the Drifters, background singing, and was very interested. I was the only girl, so it was really fun. Met a lot of good people, and I've done a lot of nightclubbing with, I have relatives in the business industry, and we did a lot of nightclubbing. And I met Ray Charles at a studio doing some background singing also, and that was very, very interesting. That was very, he's really an opportunity that, you know, once out of a lifetime that you get to meet Ray Charles. So it was very enjoyable. Also, I did some background work with Rick James's bass player. So that was also interesting, too. So in my career, I met a lot of good people, and I like the industry. The thing about I got out of the industry a little bit because I got pregnant. So like every time I was getting ready to move up on something, so it kind of, you know, put me back to, you know, well, I was still singing, but still it kind of stopped like different contracts and different promotions and things like that. So, but that's and I'm still singing now. I do weddings and things like that. I sing in the church right now, so I've really been blessed in my singing career.
Well, what's interesting, Donna, in this whole situation is, again, you run into these very interesting people in your career, but many people have had aspirations of being successful as a singer, and they might not even get to that point, and you're still involved in your career, you said, as a wedding singer and doing certain things, but kind of tell us why you wanted to be a singer. Because, again, let me give you an example. Here's a funny story, Donna. I don't know if you ever heard of December People. They're a rock band, I guess, if you call it, that were together, Boston, Sammy Hagar, certain members of the band, and they're doing the tour, and they want me to sing on stage at State College in a month, and I'm definitely not a trained singer, because they said I can't play any musical instruments, so I guess I'm going to put myself out there. But again, to be good at singing, it takes lots of practice, doesn't it, Donna?
Oh, yes, it does. I first started off as a piano. I took piano for like 7 years. And then after I took the piano lessons, then I, started singing. I've always loved to sing, and I always loved to harmonize. So my singing comes with not too much music, but just really, harmonizing with, soprano, second soprano, alto, tenor, the whole thing. So I'm one of those singers who just like to, you sing what you want to sing, but I'm going to blare. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm going to get that note, and I'm going to blend with you. And that's what I love doing. And a lot of people, they wanted me to sing because I always had that special kind of, blending. And like I said, it was from piano music, just picking up the, the different sounds of piano and first, and things like that. So that's why I really, and I still do that now. So, but I love music. I did some writing. Like I said, I play piano. I've written a lot of love songs. Didn't get them out there because, I just wasn't forceful enough. But I just love it. I just love music. So.
Well, it seems like it. So as a little girl, you sung, would you say? You grew up in singing, wanting to be a singer?
Yes, I sure did. I started off playing the piano, and after that, it got into, the reading, the music, the singing, I think I was around 9 or 10 when I first started with the music. And it just took off from there, and I just love it. It's just something that just makes me happy. It gets in my soul. It gets, I love to sing. So,
do you think you were a natural singer, or really took a lot of practice?
Well, kind of both, but basically I had to go to voice lessons, and I would recommend that for everybody. Voice lessons, it gives you, what tones that you can go through, it really gets you perfectionist as far as, your tones are concerned, and it's really good. It's just like, to me, singing is just like a person that's doing sports or something. You have to, you have to keep it up. You have to do what you have to do, and you have to do all these different sounds that sound crazy. But in the long run, basically, it's to get your voice the proper way, that you sing, the proper way that you breathe and things like that, because you can easily be, hurt your throat and things like that, not singing properly. So you have to sing from your diaphragm and just different things like that you have to really learn to do. And by taking classes, from some people that I did take classes from, it really helped a lot, Because, a lot of people think, oh, I can sing, I can carry a note, but it's more to that, you have to get your diaphragm. You have to just, it's just like running a marathon. You have to keep practicing.
See, that's a great point. And Donna, when I started out in radio 3 years ago, just on a college radio station doing a radio show once a week, it was a natural thing in certain aspects, but now doing shows every day, producing about 8 hours of programming a week, interviewing over 25 people a week. I've just become better and better at what I do. It's just like I can get out there and I can interview any type of people, like from book authors to – it's just a natural – it's just a conversation, and it's just – it's a flow. And I think that's the thing that it's happened with you. I mean, and it talks about, you know, to be successful, you needed so many hours of doing it. I'm glad you talked about the voice lessons, because my daughter, who's 7 right now, says she wants to be a singer. She sung at the talent show at 5 years old, singing God Bless America at St. Mary's. And I said, and then she kind of said, oh, I don't want to. Now she's into it again. I said, we got to get her going on this, because she's a natural in certain aspects, but you got to have that training. And then, but you have to have talent too. Some people just can't carry a note. And that's the whole deal. But I guess your biggest claim of fame is being a background singer for the Drifters. Absolutely. Wouldn't you agree to me in singing? Would you say that would be your resume, one that you say, hey, that'll be the first thing if I would mention my, I guess, claim to fame?
Right. Yeah, it was. It was a background singer. I sing solos, but I really don't like to sing solos unless I have to. You know, I had to in a couple of incidents where I had to perform on, you know, at some nightclubs and things like that. But I rather just blend in, you know. I like the background, and it's fun to me, you know. It's not that, you know, you're not really on the spotlight, but you know, you hear that, you know, you hear the soloist, and then you hear the background, which keeps that soloist going to me, you know. That's what I like to do. So that's what I would say. Yeah, I really like to do that. So your daughter should just keep on pursuing it, and it's practice, you know. You have to take care of your voice. You really do, you know. When I, you know, as I was singing, I had to work too, so I was, you know, I was on the phone all the time. So my voice was constantly, you know, I'm constantly singing and talking, you know. So I really had to be really particular with, you know, drinking different teas and, you know, different things like that. It's just something that you do because, you know, that's your life, you know. It's just like you sing and you talk, and you got to keep your, you know, vocal cords really, really, you know, up to par and healthy so that you can, you know.
Exactly. So that's great advice for our audience out there, especially. But I think that tell us the story before we run out of time about how you met the Drifters. What happened? How did you get this opportunity?
Okay, this was, now the Drifters were, you know, they were popular back in there. I wasn't their background singer when they were really, really famous. They kind of split up, and then they got a group back. They wanted to get a group back. And I ran into people, you know, like I said, when you're background singers, people kind of put you out there, you know, this person does this person does that. And they came back on the scene, and it was just like an opportunity. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, they're sitting up here, you know, in my home, and, you know, my husband, and we're just talking, and, you know, they said they wanted me to, you know, sing with them because they were starting to get back out there and perform and stuff. And that was just, words cannot describe. I was just really, really, you know, they were older than me at the time, but still, you know, for me to have that opportunity, it was just fantastic. And I really enjoyed it. We did a couple of shows, and like I said, we were going to be doing, I don't know if you remember back in the day where they might still do it, where they have the tours on the boats that they perform. Well, we were going to do that. I mean, I was really, you know, and I got pregnant, and I did a couple of shows with them. About, I couldn't get the steps, because, you know, back then, you know, the steps, the Drifters, you know, you have to know the steps, you know what I'm saying? But I got the steps, but, I mean, it was just so awkward because I was pregnant. So I was just like, you know, guys, I'm going to have to kind of sit down on this one. But it was a great opportunity, though. It was really, really good. So, but that was a high peak in my life. It was really, I loved it.
Well, it definitely sounds like you enjoyed it. And then again, I guess running into Ray Charles and then having all these opportunities, and I guess being, I guess, a mentor to people, being so, doing singing so long and getting to talk to people and say, hey, you seem like a great advocate in a way to talk to people who consider singing. And I'll have to talk to my daughter tomorrow when I get her up in the morning. As you know, I'm in the East Coast right now, and it's a decent hour for you, but for me, it's getting pretty late. Tomorrow morning I'll have her up and I'll be talking to her. I'll say, by the way, I just got some great advice from someone I interviewed, and I said, and I, my wife, and it's funny, she was saying she's going to be the next superstar singer, my daughter said, in school to somebody, and they're like, yeah, right. And my wife is like, don't they understand that Dad has a lot of Hollywood connections already? And I truly do,
right?
And because of the radio, so if she's successful, she'll have the opportunities. But Donna, it was great to talk to you, and I really am glad that you were able to tell us the story of being a background singer for the Drifters, but also the whole fact of, I guess, your career in singing and how you got started and how to become successful at it. Is there any place to find you, by the way, Donna?
Well, I'm in California. I'm singing in the church, and I'm in on the praise and worship there. That's just, you know, that's my love right now. That's my passion. But I'm singing to the Lord. But I'm still, you know, I still love to sing. You know, and if someone asks me for, you know, to sing at their wedding or different things like that, of course I'm always available. But yes, I'm in California here in the high desert. And it's kind of a slow pace up here, but, you know, I still know a lot of people in Los Angeles, Hollywood, and things like that. But, so I'm still singing. I mean, I love to sing.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you, and a great story, and thanks again for calling.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you very much.
All right, take care, Donna.
And you have a good evening.
You,
okay.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. You listen to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, you know what? My resume this week is absolutely amazing. And but I have my next guest has more experience, absolutely, of voiceover, understanding. I just broke into this business based on, I have a tutoring and consulting company. I used to be a professional wrestler. So I'm a ham, I guess, for doing this. And to start it out of a college radio station, then go to my basement and now get up to almost a million listeners a week, really, I've been pretty successful in what I've been doing. But this guy is going to be quite interesting today. I want to welcome the Rogue Program, Tim Tialdo. Tim, thanks for calling.
Hey, Neil, man. Thanks for having me on. I do appreciate it.
Oh, I'm excited because, again, I already can tell you're definitely a voiceover guy. You can hear the voice. And and I try to make it. I think I have a decent voice for radio and definitely not television, even when I do a TV show. I'll have to send you that. But basically, our topic for tonight, which is quite interesting, even though your background is more and more TV, radio type stuff, is textbook age to the video age. You really think we're getting that round? And I think that ultimately we all know that textbooks are going to slowly but surely just disappear, that books for schools are just going to go to the wind. They'll be disappearing. So you think this is coming pretty soon, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And, you know, there was actually a report that came out from the company Cisco that said by 2015, they believe that, or they estimate that 90% of all internet traffic will be video. And so there's this kind of, you know, there's this inflection point in society going on right now, you know, where they used to be, God, I wish I would have got ahead of the internet and I knew that was coming. Well, now it's video, and the fact that video is going to be education. I mean, you remember back when we grew up, I mean, it was about going back to school and going to the store with your mom and dad and buying binders and pens and calculators and all these kinds of things. Now it's about iPads and iPods and iPhones and what apps are we going to download? What programmable tools am I put on my computer to better educate myself? So educators and teachers are now having to learn how to speak to students in a way that they understand it, and that's through technology right now.
Oh, absolutely, Tim, and I think that I'm excited about this as well because, honestly, I still am the archaic one in a way, but I wish that we can create phones that are even better than this. I mean, sometimes you don't need a laptop anymore. Honestly, you could go, if you have a plug for your iPhone, you could literally just be texting people and emailing people and maybe being more productive than having a laptop on your lap. Do you agree with me on that one? I mean, that's even
I very much do agree, and I think the only reason that people like the laptops over the phones is just because the screen is bigger. I think that's really where it comes into, because you literally could sit anywhere, in a classroom, in an airport, at a cafe, and do whatever you need to do almost anytime, anywhere today. It's become ridiculous, but it's also become very convenient, and that's how the kids are growing up now, and they're... This is all they believe in. This is all they know. So when they go to the classroom, they think, well, it's got to be that easy to be able to learn as well.
So let me give you an example. And I think that your publicity company still thinks this spotlight show, kind of, we educate people in many different ways. So you're going in a direction. But I think being involved in radio and TV and understanding this is all hat to you. But let me give you an example. I'm trying to get in the best shape of my life again, but I only have time, being an entrepreneur, to walk 30 minutes a day. But I'm tweeting the entire 30 minutes. I'm hitting up about 70 people and tweeting, and I sure as heck, I don't think I could do it with a laptop. So that just shows, if you create your ability in technology and really use technology to your advantage, people probably think, oh, how could he hit Twitter like that? He's hammering it out all day. No, 30 minutes, and I'm literally probably retweeting and being in conversations. I don't know how many people, but probably reaching 70,000 to 100,000 people through that. So that just proves, like you said, young people. I'm 39, Tim, so I wouldn't say I'm young. I'm young in heart, and I guess in a way that I really love Twitter.
Oh, you're young.
I have Twitter and, you know, and all that stuff. So I think that that's what's happening with kids. Kids are now saying, you know what? Why am I going to want to see this archaic textbook and then get my paper and pencil when I can literally do everything from the textbook on the computer, right?
I mean, that's exactly. I mean, I heard somebody call it the era of distraction, and I couldn't think that's more true. I mean, you saying that you're going out for a walk for 30 minutes and tweeting, and, you know, you can even listen to things or learn things while you're reading, while you're walking. You can do whatever you want. I remember opening up a textbook in a geography class and seeing pictures that I thought were absolutely beautiful, places that I would love to go visit, maybe on a vacation with my family or something. Now, these kids can go watch a 3D video if they want to see, you know, Yosemite or Yellowstone National Park or another country that they may have never been to or been able to afford to. So it's almost this literal, you know, virtual world of, we can bring it all into the classroom, and there is no classroom anymore. I mean, you can do it wherever you want. You don't have to sit in a classroom with 18 or 20 chairs in it anymore. You can do it wherever you want.
Exactly. And I don't know, Tim, I guess if you did any research on me, my tutoring consulting company, I do a lot of Skype tutoring, and I like it better. I'm trying to tell my families, I wish that all of them could take it. I'll come to the house, but if, you know, weather permitting or cancel, if we're talking my local clients, we always can do it on Skype. You know, you cancel, well, I'll be available at 9 o'clock at night in my house, but I'm not going to be available to leave my family at 4 and, you know, go out and do that. So that's the nice luxury of Skype. And I think that Skype tutoring is more effective than one-on-one tutoring, because the ability to share screen, to be able to find all these different websites that we would have to sit right next to each other with two laptops, which would not really be very productive. You might as well not be there. And that's the virtual world.
Yeah, I mean, when you read a textbook, you know, you read it in the tone that the person wrote it. And if you don't understand that tone or didn't quite take it the way they wrote it, sometimes it makes it hard to understand. I grew up and I was terrible with textbooks. I was not a good student because I learned in that type of fashion, where I was always a very visual learner. That's why I got into television. And now these kids, you know, they can respond to facial gestures or vocal tones or body language, you know, whatever it may be with Skype. I teach people on-camera coaching through Skype, just like you teach students, you know, and tutor them over Skype. It just makes it very easy because, like you said, if you're with your family at 8:30 and you guys just finished dinner and maybe the kids are going to bed or something, you can just walk into your office there and conduct your job or your career or whatever it may be.
Or my radio show, and that's technology.
Or your radio. You can sit in your bed and do your radio show if you want it. It doesn't matter. That's how technology is making things easier, but also, you know, unfortunately for some people, lazier.
Lazier, but also the scary thing is 24 hours a day. I mean, my day is long.
You can do it at 3 a.m. if you want to.
Oh, no. Well, you can tutor, like I tutor in China, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning my time, and it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 6 o'clock in China. So that's the scary part. You can do 24 hours a day of work, and that's for another time and another place. But for the kids, guess what? They better get used to this. With the economy the way it is, Tim, now, that more and more a virtual office is going to become more and more a thing. Because why are you going to physically pay for a building when you can virtually do that? So if we don't go from the textbook to the video age, like you say, we're going to they're going to learn lose the learning curve that's going to happen based on this economy.
Well, you're going to fall behind because, I mean, the one thing that you do see a lot of companies doing now is automation, and technology has allowed them to do that, you know, email automation and video automation. And what that has done for them is it has decreased their budgets. It's allowed them to do the things that you just talked about, taking away the office building and the big things, the, you know, the brick and mortar structures that cost so much money and the overhead. And now they're able to reallocate that money towards the people instead, if they're able to do the things that they ask them to do. And now there's these big industries out there, the info marketing and info product industry, where that's what people are doing online. Is experts are now going online and having these e-learning online video courses in which they're teaching people to be able to do the things. And the companies are now starting to catch on to that, and they're saying, well, we're going to train our new hires like that. We're going to do a continuing education like that. We're going to put out our newsletters like that. And so everything about learning, education, and getting a job in today's economy now is starting to evolve around that technology of using video to be able to do so, because it just seems so much easier and cheaper for people to do.
Well, think about video. Here's the other thing. I'm in this competition with one of my clients, and I challenged him to a basketball game. I'm 6'10", by the way, Tim, and we're going to do it now. We're going to do it in L.A. in March. And he's a little older than I am, and we're not going to go into that more. But I've been posting. He has these professionally YouTube deals done. I just go grab my iPhone and start talking. And that's the other thing. The ability to anywhere. Do your own TV show with an iPhone. I mean, that changes things dramatically. I think that the days of the four major broadcasters will die. Trust me, because YouTube and all these different video services, guess what? Why do you want to go and not make much of the money when you can make a killing with your own video show? I mean, that's what's happening.
I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, and there are so many different categories in my business of hosting. I mean, there's probably 10 or 15 categories, from talk show hosting to reality show hosting to now what's called live casting and blogging. You probably know what blogging is, because it's just basically an acronym for video blogging. But live casting, there's a girl out there by the name of Justine Azarek. People may know her better by her call sign, which is iJustine. Her YouTube channel has over 240 million views. That's two and a half times the Super Bowl audience. And just by basically taping what she does every day, she's just kind of goofy. She doesn't really have any set up schedule of here's what I'm going to do and here's how I'm going to do it. She just kind of tapes what she does. She goes shopping.
Yeah.
She tapes it.
Yeah, don't get me started. My wife watches all those. I want to throw myself off of a bridge. Don't get me started on that, Tim. But it's a great point. It's an absolute great point that you don't need. And here's the other thing I found out. You make money every million you get right off YouTube, correct? They pay you.
Correct. Now they have what's called YouTube Partners, where you can make money.
And is that the best route, you think, for everybody, is to use YouTube, or at one point create their own TV?
What I tell people with YouTube is it's a great way to really create your brand. In terms of making money, I don't think it's quite there yet. I mean, if you have a really strong following or a big audience that follows you already, yeah, you can earn some money. But, there's a few people out there right now making, $75,000, $100,000. But, to quit your job and say this is going to be my career, you're going to need to build a pretty strong following to be able to do that. I don't think we're quite at that point just yet.
It's all about branding, right, Tim? That's what it is. If you do a TV show, you do a radio show, it's all about branding to help grow your business. And so many people in this economy has to figure out another way to do that. And I think that's your passion, to teach people how to do that, right?
Exactly. It's how do you market and brand yourself? Because you have to become what basically an infopreneur. You know, they always call it an entrepreneur. Now it's about being an infopreneur. You have to be able to give something to people. What are they? Why are they following you? It's not just because you look good or you're funny or whatever. You know, you have to be. People are looking for something everywhere they go, and they have such short attention spans because of the amount of technology that's out there, from apps to Twitter to Facebook to LinkedIn to Google, whatever it may be. And they want to know, what is this person going to be able to give me? And if you do come up with a structure and a way to correctly schedule, market, brand yourself in a specific way, you're going to create something that will grow in the future, and that people will try and catch up to you eventually, because you'll be ahead of the curve by doing that right now.
Exactly, and I think you're surprised how much this topic motivates me. But you know what, I really like it. I like how we were talking from textbook to video. But what your background is in your book, I want you to talk a little bit about the book for a second before we run out of time. And I think I'm going to have to book you just to talk about the book, honestly, Tim, because I think that it's something that people need. And let me kind of give you a point. That every entrepreneur out there wants to have their own video. Well, I'm telling you right now, I'm branding somebody myself. Everybody wants to be the next superstar, just so that people buy their product or join their service. It's never going to get you rich off television, be honest. Unless you luck out and become Honey Boo Boo, you're not guaranteed to make a ton of money. Don't quit your J job. But if it can help you increase your business, that's where you see in a lot of your training or your teaching, don't you? That entrepreneurs are looking to be able to brand themselves better.
Yeah, and I think everybody wants to get out there in some way. You know, I mean, we live in a world in which celebrity status is kind of the way to not only be known, but also to make money anymore. And, you know, any way you can get yourself out there on a TV show, on a radio show, whatever it may be, people are looking for ways to be able to do that. And the reason I wrote the book is because I grew up wanting to be on TV. I mean, I have a big personality. God gifted me with a voice. And so, you know, people would always tell me that. And I thought, you know, that'd be a great business to get into. But as I got into it, I found that a lot of people were like me, that when we grew up, we were visual learners, and we really had a tough time in school, but we knew we had the ability to communicate with people, and we knew we had the ability to entertain people. And so the business is very mysterious, you know, and it has been for a long time. You know, you always had to have a dynamite resume or a celebrity name already to be able to kind of get on television. And as I explored the business for the last decade, you know, I found out all the little nuances that needed to be done. How do you get into the castings, and who do you talk to, and how do you get the training you need to get? And so I wrote the book. It's called Host Your Own TV Show, 5 Steps to Help You Become a Top TV Personality. The first thing we talked about is, what is a host? Then we talk about, how do you develop your talent? Then we get into what you and I just talked about on developing your brand and marketing yourself. We talk about working with an agent. Do you need an agent? And then the dreaded audition. You know, that's the last part of the book, because a lot of people are so scared about the audition. They, you know, they freak out, they sweat, they're worried, am I going to get sick when I go in there? And I kind of give them, you know, the step-by-step process, so they don't, you know, puke all over the audition table when they walk in.
Well, absolutely.
From having the nerves.
Well, and like I said before, I think that if you really have a passion for this, do it. And I am, again, I would consider myself, how I fell into this radio gig thing, but I more and more think I'm a journalist. The bigger names, if you're on Facebook with me, Tim, you got to friend me. You got to see who I've interviewed this week. Like I said, I had Alana Stewart on my show this week. I've had Carl Banks from the New York Giants on my show, Hall of Famer, and also I had on, it'll come to me in a second, Lisa Gibbons on my show this week. So really,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So really getting the big name people, and that's what I found out is people love internet radio. But yet, you got to have an audience, but yet also you got to learn how to deal with the publicists. And if people can email me at nhaley@totaltutor.org and say, how do you get all these guests? Well, I can help you. Trust me, it's not a difficult thing, but yet you got to work hard and you got to want your show to be the best. And you can't sound like an internet radio show. I mean, I started in terrestrial radio.
Right.
I started in terrestrial radio. I'm a professional studio, I would say. I mean, it's really, if you looked at it, it wouldn't look professional, but it sounds professional in my basement office. And that's what you do. And Tim is the one to show you on television. And I really appreciate you coming on, and I want you to come back just to talk about the book. I'm going to definitely.
Well, man, I would love to.
And be a regular in certain ways. And I got also an entrepreneur show that you could talk about that as well and promote. And we're doing a lot of great things called the Beach Lifestyle. And we're trying to connect entrepreneurs all over the world together to create different services and have a porthole. And we're trying to do that. And that's the guy I was talking about that I'll be out in L.A. in March, by the way. So it was a great conversation, Tim. And that's what I love about radio is I network with such great people. And I definitely want to have you back. So thanks again for calling. And
hey,
oh, yeah. Well, first of all, website and book. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead and tell
me. Oh, no, that's okay. It's timtialdo.com. Last name is spelled T-I-A-L-D-O. And my book, once again, you can find it on Amazon. It's Host Your Own TV Show, 5 Steps to Help You Become a Top TV Personality.
Well, thanks again for calling, Tim, and we'll definitely have you back. Take care.
Thanks, Neil.
All right. All right, that was Tim Tialdo. You're listening to Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember, go to my website, TotalTutor.org, for more information. Well, always interesting when I meet people at the National Publicity Summit. I enjoy talking to them because they have so many different backgrounds and interesting ways that they help people. And I want to welcome the program, Lori Gardner. Lori, thanks for calling.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right, Lori, let's kind of go right into specifically Enough. You're an author. You do much, much more. So tell our audience a little bit about your background, then we'll get into the book.
Sure, absolutely. So for the past 20 years, I've been an educator, an author, a wellness expert, a coach, and a teacher. And the common theme I have throughout everything I've done is really helping people to just stop settling for less in their life and to really live their lives as fully as they can.
And that's so important. I mean, like I said, we can't get up every morning and then have doubt in our lives. We can't be telling ourselves, you know what, we just can't do. Because honestly, I know, Lori, if you have that mindset on my entrepreneur show today, we talked about that, that specifically if you think you can't do something, you're just not going to be able to do it.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it's actually a little bit sad. I mean, so many people are living small. And what I call living small is they're in jobs that they hate. They're in relationships that just aren't doing it for them. They're not happy with their health, but not doing anything about it. And maybe they're even living in a place that doesn't feel like home. And a lot of people just feel helpless, like, oh, well, there's nothing really I can do about it. But I agree with you 100%. It's all what you can do about it.
It's kind of funny when I think about what you're saying. It speaks to me when I decided to leave professional wrestling and go back and become a teacher. But I was an entertainer for so many years. I mean, 8 to 9 years of entertaining, and that's all I did. I mean, I worked another job, but specifically it was my joy to entertain people. And I guess getting back in the entertainment field where I'm at now, to the point of having a radio show every day, to a television show, opportunities to do interviews all over the country, do talks, it's a really exciting thing, and I think that that's what I was missing. I was missing, and then also getting out and seeing people. When you're stuck in a classroom, it's teaching for some people. But for me, I truly was that type of person that likes to go out and talk to people. So I think that's what talks about in your book is specifically, we cannot just stay in this box and say, forget it. We're not going to reach out and find different things that we really love. We're just going to stay safe, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the book has a really funny backstory. I was working in a very high-pressure job. I was reforming schools all over the world. And I just needed to take a break. And so I went off in the desert on something called a vision quest, which I didn't even know what it was, but a friend had gone. And while I'm out there literally fasting in the desert, no food, just water in the summer in New Mexico, I ended up writing this book, The Road to Shine, in 4 days. It literally came pouring out into my leather journal.
Wow. I tell you right now, things just speak to you in specific ways where you have no idea what happened, and it kind of a switch goes on, honestly. And I mean, like, you'll go in through an adversity or certain thing. If you truly look at it as something that's teaching you a lesson, you're shocked. So going out in the desert, you kind of just said, wow, I found my purpose now. I cannot continue to do what I'm doing where I'm just kind of drained and feel like it's just not what my passion is, right?
Exactly. And I mean, I loved the work that I did in school reform. I loved that I was helping so many families, but I have to be honest with you, I was helping everybody but me. The same old story of those of us in the helping professions. So while I did actually have great, great passion for the work I was doing, I was just burning myself at every end, not just at both ends. I think at every end, I was frying myself up.
So how do you make those changes? I mean, like you said, you came and wrote the book in 3 days or got to the idea of what you wanted to do in your life. How did that change? Explain your daily routine when you were involved in school reform and ed reform to now, how your day is.
Well, for one thing, I'm sleeping now, Neil, so that's a good thing.
Okay, I think that's important, which I'm not sleeping because of my fourth child, but I still wasn't sleeping before that. But I think let's continue with that. What else?
Well, you know, if I had kids, I'd have an excuse, right? But unfortunately, it was all me doing it. And again, I was just really passionate, really driven about the work, but really wasn't applying the same self-care to myself. Total different changes. I mean, I was working very, very hard, had very little time for myself back then, but again, loved the work, just too focused on others. And now my life is much more in balance. I left that job. I'm now on this new path of helping people through coaching and teaching and writing. And I just love my life right now. I plan my day. I sleep when I need to sleep. I work when I need to work. I exercise when I want to exercise. Just it's a completely, I can't even compare them.
So what I would call it is living the beach lifestyle. And this is a shout out to my co-host of the Entrepreneur Show, and he is the one, the beach lifestyle, GJ Reynolds, that ultimately when you work for yourself, you have a different purpose in life. You have a different schedule. You have a different situation. Even though I don't sleep as much, when I was a teacher and running a business part-time and constantly was burning the candle at both ends because I really wasn't so passionate in the classroom, I was passionate in what I was doing as an entrepreneur. Once I finally started to work for myself and I constantly were doing things to truly help people and had control of helping others, I just had that fire just come right there and just truly I know what I'm doing now and what my purpose is.
Exactly, and you're nailing really what my book is all about, what my coaching and teaching is all about. It's really about, well, you know, why did you come here? What did you come here to contribute? I totally agree with you. I don't think that we came here to just reach the end of our lives and go like, yeah, that was okay. It was like a 5 out of 10 or maybe even a 6 out of 10. No, we're supposed to really be alive about something and really feel good about what we're doing every day.
And it doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you enjoy it or you put that effort into it to enjoy it. I mean, enjoy yourself. Don't put stress on your life. A lot of times people look at adversity and they look at, okay, I'm falling down and I'm going to look at this as, woe is me, the world's over, and then everything else that goes wrong the rest of the day just sets off your whole day. And I think that as an entrepreneur, we think differently, Lori. We think in a way that's unlike many people in this world because we look at specifically enough, we are guiding our careers. We are looking towards the future, and it's the future's bright because of what perspective we have. That's the truth.
And you also learn to roll with the punches.
Right, exactly.
God, you would love the scene. So my book is filled with a lot of travel stories, outdoor adventures. I used to work for Outward Bound, throwing people off cliffs and down rivers and things. And on my last night of my vision quest, I actually had to do a ritual where you draw a circle 6 feet across and you step in at sunset and you're not to come out until sundown. And I'm at the top of this mountain ridge and literally a hailstorm hit me just as I stepped in. And so for 10 hours, I was pummeled with hail. And when I got back to the group, because I went with a group, they just were like, oh, my God, you stayed in the circle? And I would have quit. There's no way. What a terrible last night. And I thought, are you kidding? It was one of the most incredible, powerful, all attitude, right?
Exactly. And I think that what it brings to the fact is that you finally are kind of living kind of at the edge, but understanding you want to enjoy life, looking at life in a way. I believe, Lori, if you and your mind can believe that you're doing what you love to do, you're happy. You take chances, you take risks, but you understand the perspective that sometimes we're going to fall and we're going to have to get back up. I think it's all about if you're doing stuff you love. I think what I'm going to do with my children, and I think it's important, as long as they're doing something ethically okay, I'm not going to say, I'm not going to say, by the way, you know what, I really want you to do this. No, I want to guide them to what their purpose is, what they truly believe they're called to do and want to do and enjoy doing. Because you can't sit at a cubicle the rest of your life regretting and living for the weekend. You can't be in board meetings and absolutely be bored off your gourd when you just want to be outdoors. So enjoying and finding what you're passionate about, you're going to have success. And I think that so many people in our country settle for safe, right?
Well, and people are scared right now, and this is no excuse, but, you know, people will come up with every possible reason not to live their passion. Oh, well, you know, the economy is so terrible, I couldn't possibly think about what I really want to do in my work sphere. Or, yeah, I'd love to be in better shape, but oh, I just don't have time to go to the gym. Or I'm too old to find true love. Or, and I'm listening and thinking, really? Is that really what you believe? That is such a shame, because it's never too late to find your passion and to go for it. But there are some real blocks that people need to work through. I mean, a lot of what came out in that book was three clear steps of how can you live your passion, because you can't just jump to, oh, I'm going to go for it.
No,
you know, first you have to clean out the crap that's holding you back, excuse my French, but you really have to clean off those things that are holding you from really going for it. And for some people, sure, it's fear of failure or success or being judged, laughed out of their family or whatever. For other people, it may be that they've inherited different family patterns subconsciously, and well, you know, they learned from their mom that if you are too selfish and put your needs first, then you're a bad person. Well, you're never going to achieve what you want to achieve if you can't sometimes at least put your own needs first. So there's all this juicy good stuff that you can look at to first see, all right, well, why am I not going for it? And then the second step is, a lot of people are like, yeah, okay, I want to do something else, I just don't have a clue what that is. And that's a whole other step as well. All right, what is your passion? What is your purpose? And so as I, you know, coach and teach, I'll ask questions like, if you had no responsibilities in the world, all the money and time in the world, what would you do? How would you fill your day?
And if you're doing what you love, it, without that, that kind of answers the question. So what's the third step? After you figure out what your passion and purpose is, what do you do next?
Well, so then you have to have the courage to actually live it. And again, to use a rock climbing analogy, I don't know, have you ever seen rappelling before, where people kind of are clipped into ropes? Right. So you're clipped into these ropes, and you have to take a step back off of this rock face, basically a sheer cliff. And the reality of the situation is that you're only going to be in the air maybe for 1 to 2 seconds before your foot kind of gently hits the rock face right below you. But people perceive that taking that first step is so scary that, honestly, people get stuck up there for hours. And it's the same with finding the courage to live your passion. Just take one small step.
Lori, I completely agree with you. I mean, taking that leap, as you were talking about, off the rock and just basically saying, I'm going to do this. Because so many people have these cool ideas, this great passion, great ideas that can really help society, and really then they feel healthy about themselves, do the best things they possible, and guess what they do? They just have that doubt in their mind and say, or the naysayer tells them, no way, you can't do it. And I feel sad for them, because what I'm doing now, I'm passionate about, I love what I'm doing, and I couldn't do anything else.
Well, one thing I've learned for myself is that you absolutely have to get rid of the negative voices around you. And that might mean friends and family members who you used to spend a lot of time with. But it's really a time to just, you don't need negativity inside your own head. You don't need negativity and naysayers outside your head. That's something that I found initially a little bit scary, like, oh, I'm going to lose all the people I'm close to. But you know what? The folks who know you best and care the most about your well-being are going to support you. Even if they don't understand the new direction you're going in, they're totally going to be on board. And so anyone who's naysaying or putting fear or doubt into your mind, they mean well. They're concerned, but I say clear them out.
And that's a challenge. Or ignore them. two different things. Or don't talk about what you're doing in front of them so that that can mess you up. Because I understand completely what you're talking about, and that's a great advice. So, Lori, I know you have a couple things. First of all, where can we purchase your book, your website, and also some important events coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is lorigardner.com, and that's spelled L-A-U-R-I-E. G-A-R-E-N-E-R, LoriGardner.com. And if that's too hard, you can just go to Get Real Guru.